He has expertise in creating insights using data and converting data and idea into a product. He has vast experience in data science, in SAS, R, and Python, in different analytical projects. With his deeper understanding of the commercial, retail, agriculture, and banking domains, he delivered projects with retail chains, agricultural giants, and Microsoft. Let us know more about Harish Kingre's career journey and discuss a very interesting topic in data curiosity.
Hello. Hi there. Welcome to the Guiding Voice podcast series, The Guiding Voice for a Better Future. This podcast is to help professional students, IT employees, and entrepreneurs to shape their careers. Dear listeners, in every episode, we interact with industry experts, our thought leaders, our academicians, our coaches across the globe to drive some insightful conversations that will help each one of you learn great things. Also, we share an interesting trivia or a fun fact about the IT world or technology towards the end. So stay tuned till the end. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is your host, Naveen Samala, and with my co-host, Sudhakar Nagandla. So folks, today we are going to discuss a very interesting topic. Now that data is the new oil, data is the new currency, data is the new everything, let us understand the data curiosity and how it will be the foundation for the data-oriented solution. And we are pleased to have Harish, part of TGV's journey in shaping the lives and careers of millions across the globe.
Harish, welcome to TGV. Can we get started?
Sure. Thanks, Sudhakar. Thanks, Naveen.
Thank you for taking time, Harish. SAS, R, Python. Harish, can you talk a bit about your career background and a couple of key highlights that helped you in reaching out to this position and dealing with the most recent and most in-demand topic, data?
Sure. So this analytical career was actually a sweet accident for me. One of the university professor during my master asked me to do some survey analysis. And that's where I realized that data can be really powerful to get most of the answer out of the data, like out of the surveys and everything. So that's when I started learning about the statistics. That's when I actually exposed to SAS. SAS is a statistical analysis software. And in 2004, SAS was very dominant in the industry. If you want to do anything in the data, the SAS was the most dominant software. And in those, when I started with SAS, I believe I started doing data analysis for the retail giant, data analysis for the bank giant. When I moved back to India, I started actually investigating into SAS as well as R. And that's when I realized that the SAS and R are kind of like a identical language, but R is more freely available, as well as you'll get more insight about the R from the industry. And I continued with R about for like 7 to 8 years as well. But after 8 years, I moved to Python. And Python is one of the language, I think it gives you a real good freedom. So when you are actually thinking about the product, you need to think about Python. So that's all about, I think, my technical journey. In terms of my career, I took a risk in a different area. I started with a retail giant. Then I moved to another banking domain. Then I'm because I was looking for more and more complex work. And I decided to move back to India about 10 years ago. That was a really good experience because I started working with agriculture giant. And that's when I realized that the people are in retail are much, much ahead of the agriculture people. And that's where I actually started implementing all the practices from the retail to the agriculture as well. And I realized that anyone across the different domain, across the different industry can actually take a whole lot of advantage from the data. Yeah, so from last 10 years, I changed 2 or 3 different careers. I worked with agriculture giant, then I worked with manufacturing, then I worked with Microsoft, and then finally I'm working with Syngenta right now, where I'm actually converting a lot of data into a product. Yeah, I think that's all about my career.
So starting from a data survey activity for master's program, to interest in statistics and now dealing with huge amounts of data. So whether you were with retail, whether you were with agriculture, Microsoft, or now with current company, these are all like huge amounts of data, right? How do you deal with all of it? So can we briefly talk about the role of a data scientist with this huge amount of data?
Sure. If you think about data, right, and if you think about data scientist, data is kind of like available almost everywhere. But how a data scientist can make a difference with the data is only if we understand the data really well. It's almost like a data represent a business process or data represent life science process. But a data scientist, if he's able to understand that process and if he's able to convert the data into important milestone of that process, that's where I think the data scientist actually plays a big role. So if you think about a data scientist, what his main responsibilities is to understand the data, bring those key milestone or key understanding of that entire process from the data outside, and then apply algorithm to make product out of. So that's the role of the data scientist, as the name suggested, data and scientist. So what he does is actually look at the data and understand the process behind it. And based on that process or the science, he builds a feature around it. So that's the reason it's called data scientist.
I think that was very well summarized, Harish. You need to understand the data well, convert data into key or critical insights, and then apply an algorithm to make product out of it. Okay, so that was very well summarized. Again, Harish, talking about some of the buzzwords in the IT industry, right? Every other day we get to hear a new buzzword and all, be it emotional curiosity and then emotional intelligence. And these days we're talking about data curiosity. So what is data curiosity in general, in your opinion?
Yes, I realize it, I think, and within my first four year of a career, that the programming part of the data scientist is actually much easier, but understanding data is actually much tougher. I had a very interesting task when I was working with one of the agriculture giants. They asked me to hire people from the current IT industry, and they asked me to don't hire any external, only hire internal. So for me, it was very tricky task, because if you think about it, I need to hire people who had no understanding of machine learning, data science, and I need to make them data science. And I need to keep all of my project running as well. I was just thinking about it, that how do I solve this problem? Then I realized that most of the software engineer, whether they are in the data part or whether they are in the building a software part, are very well versed with the programming. But what they miss is the data curiosity. So I designed the interview for almost all the candidate where I literally gave them a data. And I asked them, like, can you actually solve this? Can you give me some insight out of the data? So the person who came to me and told me that, hey, there are four columns, there are 20,000 rows, and there are one primary key. I totally understand their software background. But the person who came to me and told me that there are four columns, there are 20,000 rows, and the first column has four different categories. The second column has maybe, I think, 10 different categories. And the 11th category is completely outliers or anomalies. And in the third column is very unique because it is continuous variable, but it ranges from this to this. That's where the data curiosity shows. So that's where I was able to understand the person has a huge interest in understanding the data, not understanding the data from the dimension point of view, but understanding the data from the process point of view. So that's what the data curiosity means. So even today, when I'm asking someone, I'm not asking them questions related to programming, because I know that if they are from computer science background or they are from engineering background, or if they have done any work in their software engineering area, they will know the programming really well. What I'm looking from them is like data curiosity. So that's what data curiosity mean for me. Whether it's image data, whether it's a big block of words, whether it's a big data altogether, what I'm looking for is a data curiosity, because that's the foundation of solving any data problem.
Yeah, fair enough. I think you have given your own experience in terms of how this word has been coined and all. And now let us shift gear and talk about how can this data curiosity help in solving the real world problems? Maybe you can share out of your experience without naming the companies or something.
Sure. So particularly worked on this problem for a year, and it was the most complicated problem I ever solved, actually. So I was working with one of the manufacturing giants, and they have a manufacturing process which is actually really complicated. It's a combination of chemical, physical, and mechanical. And we were given an opportunity to improve the efficiency of that entire manufacturing process by 10 to 15%. Sounds very small, but if you are able to increase the efficiency by 10 to 15%, they will make literally, I think, around $200,000 to $300,000 per plant if you're able to do that thing. So that was a very big deal for us, right? It was completely a new area for me because in my past, the problem that I solved was more related to that, hey, here is the data, solve the problem. But here, it was completely different because they literally told me that this is the problem that you need to solve and you don't have a domain understanding and you have 1 year to solve it. So what we started doing is we started understanding the entire end-to-end manufacturing process. And to understand that entire end-to-end manufacturing process, we had to meet with people who are working in the factory. We have to read articles. We have to basically understand the chemical recipes. We have to understand the physical changes in the product when they're making that entire product. So almost all of those we have to understand. We have to understand that how actually the temperature changes within those areas, how the speed of the spindle actually has an impact on increasing the efficiency, how weight of the spindle has an impact on increasing the efficiency, almost everything. So we were able to come up with like around 250 parameters across the entire life cycle of this manufacturing process. And then we faced one interesting problem. Realized that out of this 250 parameters, we cannot control nearly about 120 of them. The reason was very simple because those 120 belongs to the machinery company who actually created the entire machinery for this manufacturing process. And if we want to change any parameter over there, we need to change the entire machinery. That was out of the equation. So we were given only that 120 parameter. And out of those 120 parameter, we not only have to prove that there are many parameters out of this, which actually has a major impact, but we also need to prove that certain changes in those parameters will make a huge impact in the efficiency also. And we were able to do it. And we basically ran the pilot for the last 2 months. And we were able to show that 15% efficiency can be improved by controlling certain processes in a different way as compared to what they were doing as of today. So it was a very interesting problem. But the one thing I realized, I think, in this entire problem was that collecting data, understanding data, especially from the manufacturing point of view, takes a lot of time because you have to meet with all the people who are in the manufacturing facilities and understand what they do, why do they do like that. And we also realized that the parameter which are controllable and which are not controllable, that was a very unique thing for us.
Because we are actually looking for that real-time use case where, you know, you could collaborate with many teams and collect that data and thereby improving the business efficiency overall, right? But as you were mentioning, Harish, the way I was playing it in my mind, it requires a lot of coordination, collaboration, and, requires a lot of process changes. And it is a cross-domain activity in a way, right? Because it is not pertaining to one use case, one team, because you are looking for business efficiency, business driving the business value, not necessarily from one function or one domain. So how do you create that curiosity among the employees that, hey, you know, Harish and his team actually came here to help us rather than to challenge us. So how do you create that data curiosity mindset in the employees?
Glad you asked that question. So whenever we create a solution, there are two ways to look at the solution. One way to look at the solution is that, hey, I created this solution, you need to implement it. The other way to look at the solution, we created this solution and it will help you to improve your current job profile and it will make you kind of like a hero in your current job. So we always follow the second approach where we just act as an enabler. Because if you go anywhere, I think there are people who are responsible to improve the efficiency. They are responsible to get the insight of the data. So those people are responsible to do those tasks. We are just enabling them. So anytime when we work with the people, when you work with different part of the functions, we just making them more successful rather than making our project more successful. That's the key, I would say, the message I would like to pass to most of the data scientists is that we are not creating a solution. We are making the people in the business more successful by creating the solution.
I think an excellent mindset and, you know, that partnership and collaboration approach, right? That is the way where we can bring the overall performance of the organization to next level, not necessarily taking the credit, because at the end of the day, we are improving the efficiency of the overall organization. Amazing, Harish. Or maybe future trends in data science.
Yeah. So I've been actually working in the data science area for the last 15 years. I've seen a lot of trends and everything. I think whatever the answer I give you right now might be a little biased because I'm working in the agriculture industry. But I believe that the future trend will be more toward computer vision and more toward satellite data altogether. The reason behind that is very simple, because if you look at it, I think because of COVID and because of all the other activities, the digitization is actually topmost priority for most of the organization. And digitization means more data, more automation. And when you have more data and more automation, that also means that most of the things has to be quality driven. And I believe if you want to drive most of the things toward the high quality, computer vision plays a very big role. And since I'm talking about agriculture, of course, the satellite data plays a very big role. So that's the reason I'm a little biased toward that one. So computer vision and satellite data are going to be two hot trends, I think, in the next few months or year.
Wonderful. Thank you for sharing those insights, Harish. And this conversation has been fantastic so far. But let's add some spice to the episode by asking you a few rapid fire questions. If you are ready, we'll get started.
Sounds good.
All right. So you can answer them as crisply as possible. Okay, so we'll get started with the very first bullet out of the rapid fire. What is the most adventurous thing that you have done so far, Harish?
So I'm from Pune and I have done a K2S during the rainy season. So that's the most adventurous thing, because K2S is nothing but a mountain race, which where you have to cross, I believe, 6 different mountains. But during the rainy season, it's very tricky and very slippery. That's the most adventurous thing I've done. Yeah.
Scary to imagine as well. And no wonder it might be very adventurous. All right, yeah. Moving on to the next one from the rapid fire. What is your favorite failure?
My favorite failure is a recent project, one of the recent projects that I worked upon. I felt that I delivered what I want to deliver, but I think the business doesn't believe that thing. But the thing is, like, I learned so much about the business that I love that failure.
Okay, fair enough. Moving on. What is a hidden talent that no one knows about you?
I like to write poem, and I think the only person knows about that is my wife.
You would love to listen to that in case once it is out, probably share it with us. All right.
I'll definitely do sometime. Yeah.
Sure. And moving on to the next one, Harish, what has been a question on your mind for which you haven't got answer so far?
The question about nature, I think in the current kind of like environment, the nature is very unpredictable, or the weather, like it, environment is very unpredictable. And I want it to be more predictable, and I don't know how to make it predictable.
Yeah, very interesting. Okay, so this has been great rapid fire. I would like to shoot the last bullet out of the rapid fire. What will be your message to your own younger version, Harish?
The only message that I want to give is, like, have more fun in your life and keep learning.
That's cool. All right. So that was a fabulous rapid fire round, and it was really quick. Thank you for those rapid fire answers. And with that, I would like to switch the session back to mainstream. Over to Sudhakar.
Thank you, Naveen. And thank you, Harish. Starting from mountain racing during rainy season to writing poems and having a wish to make nature more predictable. One thing that I really liked is the last one, because consistently we are observing that when we ask this question in the rapid fire session with any of the guests, almost everyone said the same thing. Have a little more fun and be having that learning mindset. So for our audience, I think that those are two important tips. Have more fun, because when you grow up to your next or future one, you would realize that you did not spend that much time having fun, and always keep learning, right? Harish, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. One final question, I would say, for this session. What will be one piece of advice that you want to give to those aspiring to make big in their careers?
One of the things that I realized early in my career, when I was actually chasing big roles, that I think the big roles are not important. The work which actually makes you happy is more important. So don't chase roles or money. Chase the work that you really like. And if you enjoy the work, if you can spend hours and hours in the work and without worrying about time, I think that can make you happy for the entire life. Yeah, I think that's the only piece of advice I want to give to everyone.
Chase the work that you love, then you don't need to work forever, right? Because yes, you love what you do. Amazing. Harish, thank you so much for joining us today. It was great to talk to you about data curiosity, but an IT profession in general. We really appreciate you taking time for us. I'm sure our audience is going to love and enjoy every bit of this conversation.
Glad you guys invited me. I think this was my first opportunity, but I'm hoping it's not the last opportunity. Yeah.
For sure. We would love to host you again with more and more details, including the most recent poem that you wrote? Because we would love to hear that.
Exactly. I was able to remind about the poem. All right. So, yeah, it was pleasure hosting you, Harish. And thanks again for being part of TGV's journey in shaping the lives and careers of millions across the globe. All right. So with that, let's move on to the trivia segment of today's episode. So folks, today's trivia is about first computer mouse. I remember we mentioned about who invented the first computer mouse and what was the material it was made of. But today you are coming with a different question. How many buttons did the first mouse have? I know you are thinking, but let me tell you the answer. The first ever computer mouse invented in the early 1960s by Douglas Engelbart, right? During his research time at Stanford Research Institute, California, he created a mouse made of wood and it has only one button. So early prototypes of the mouse consisted of a rectangular wooden shell with two metal balls inside and one for the x-axis and one for the y-axis. It had only one button on the corner. The device was originally designed to work with the Xerox Alto computer system and was referred to as the XY position indicator for a display system. But later on, Engelbart himself coined the term mouse. Interesting, isn't it? Thank you so much for listening. There is more in store, folks. Stay tuned. Take care. Be safe. Until next time, bye-bye. And we are signing off for today. See you all in the next episode with another wonderful guest.